station was in.
I woke up this morning with the sun down shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down shining in. I found my mind in a brown
paper bag. Well, thanks, Jackson. Jacks. That's how I'm out. Mr. Jack Silverman on the board. S&P futures up 24. We were down yesterday. Should have bought last night on the close because we know we can't be down 2 days in a row because the Fed can't handle that. We are... off the charts here. We're not sure where this is going to end, but it's someday it's all going to end someplace. Maybe good, maybe bad. Do we have Mr. Kevin?
You do.
How are you, man?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I got my attitude adjusted this week.
Somebody slapped you upside the head?
Nah, I watched A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
Oh, God. There you go. Well,
no, it really isn't an oh, God. It's a very uplifting movie.
Good. I'm going to have to watch. Can't think of one of those. There's a few dark movies I watched lately. I couldn't even watch the end of them because I don't want to see the good guy get killed. But
well, it's really good. It's not the story of Mr. Rogers. It's the story of a cynical writer who was assigned to cover Mr. Rogers and the relationship they developed.
Ah, a cynical writer. That could be us.
But you get, you know, can you imagine the Can you imagine the contrast between Mr. Rogers' unfailing optimism and a cynic?
Yeah. Well, and the weird part is they probably are both somewhat right.
Well, this week a cynic is totally right.
Yeah, it's because
this is not only has there been. Tragedy and anger and, you know, everything that, you know, that is out there. But, man, we have ginned up the stupid stuff, too.
Oh, yeah. It's, and, you know, I was just thinking on the way in, then Maddie the Badger on the way in, so, it's such an amazing, we've come 200 and some years, and there are things that we just, we don't seem to have any definition on even yet. I don't know. Crime and Punishment is one of them. Raising kids is probably another one. But we don't seem to have, I mean, education, we can't figure out whether it's worth it or not. I mean, we lack definition, and we've degraded into this. Everybody has an opinion based on Twitter and based on other people. They were interviewing some kids, young kids, they were 17 that were protesting yesterday, and why they were doing it and so forth. And I applaud them for taking the time to express themselves, but I don't applaud them for their for a couple of guys they interviewed seem to have no lack of history. They have total lack of any kind of history whatsoever. I mean, it's just, and you know, in my world, and I know I'm never going to get there. And Lou says that I really shouldn't even say this out loud because it's not anywhere near the story today. In my world, I want to get to a place where. Black and white don't matter. Whether everybody is colorblind. And Lou is convinced that that's not the politics of today. And I'm sure he's right. I mean, I was thinking myself on the way in playing basketball. I mean, for years and years I played everywhere. You know, if it was a park, I was there, it was someplace. And there were many times, usually I played mostly against white guys, but not always, there were many times, not, you know, not a lot, but because I was not a big, I was not Mr. Mr. Hack or anything like that, where, you know, somebody committed an elbow, you'd nail you, and you'd elbow them back. Now, I can only imagine if everybody in the world was on the side of the court one day, and the guy elbowed back happened to be black. I didn't elbow him back because he was black. I elbowed him because he elbowed me. I mean, and to me, that's the way the world should be. You don't care whether the guy's black or white. You react the same way. And yet, if
you don't care whether a guy's black or white, you throw the elbow.
Yeah, you throw the elbow. But I'm saying, what
words
if,
to live by, Tom?
Yeah,
I mean,
but I'm saying, what if 15 swinging idiots?
We have the title for today's show in the first 5 minutes.
Well, I mean, what if 15 swinging idiots are sitting there taping it on the phone and only caught that piece? Jeez, Chiefs guys are.
Well, yeah, and we've seen plenty of instances of that, of things that go viral, you know, based on the unjust part of the story. And so we, you know, go back to your initial comment about, you know, everybody think wants to get their news off of Twitter and Facebook, and those are the worst places to get it. But I don't know if getting your news from the news is really a good
place
to get it.
Well, I agree with that
either,
too,
because they're just as susceptible.
But in this particular case, I mean, everybody is in agreement. Everybody's listened to the show forever. Everybody's known me from forever. Know that anybody. But the penalty for being, you know, an idiot is not death, right? And if it is, it sure as hell isn't the policeman's job to mete out that punishment. So everybody knows that. But I also know, Kevin, that who were the guys that they got shot? I don't know where the hell they got shot. It was in Baltimore or someplace. Where the guys left home that night, you know, beat up some convenience store guy, robbed that place, wandering down the street, tried to muscle a couple cars, and they end up getting shot. Now, getting shot is not what's happening. You shouldn't die from that. I get that. But I don't think, though, Kevin, we have an answer. I mean, we leaving your house at night to create that kind of mayhem should give you a clue that your evening may not end well. But I don't know how it should end, Kevin. We arrest people, somehow they're right back out doing the same thing. We don't educate people in jail. We don't have any job opportunity when they come out. We don't seem to have, obviously death is not the answer, we all know that, but what is the answer? I mean, this guy tried to buy something with an obviously fake $20 bill. Okay, now, you don't get killed for that, I understand that, but it's also not something you should be doing either. And I think society has got to the point now where they throw their hands up. And I think you can see it in child rearing. Okay, you can't smack anymore. Fine, it's... What are you supposed to do? Well, you put them in a timeout. Then I read something 6 months ago. Oh, God, do you have any idea what it does to a kid being by himself for 15 minutes? Gee, I don't know. How bad is it? You know, well, you can't do that anymore. Well, okay, take away his phone at age 8. Well, oh, no, you're depriving him of his... I mean, there seems to be a lot of criticism on what we're doing, but I don't see anything that remotely looks like an answer to you.
No, I really don't. Although there are lots of answers being thrown around, I mean, you know, there's lots of places saying, well, we should disband the police department,
yeah,
those kinds of things. Now, remember, we are throwing around answers this week after months and months and months of hearing, look at the data, look at the science, you know the data. It's always about the data, right? And now, with no data whatsoever, we are totally willing to start throwing out the solutions.
Right, and I...
Without even testing them.
Well, we have...
And some of them are crazier than others.
We have incidences 3-4 nights a week now of people shooting outside of cars at people on the expressways here in Chicago. Okay, now we're not gonna want to stop these guys. I mean, this is the weird part. I mean, some things you remember from your childhood. My mother said when you're raising kids, it's really easy to say yes. It's real hard to say no. If you just want to be a lazy-ass parent, you just say yes all the time, then all of a sudden you got some kind of monster on your hands. But saying no once in a while or putting in boundaries is difficult. That's why being a parent is difficult. Every arrest is not a pleasant thing to have happen. It's not holding hands, right? It's not having a beer with someone.
Or a traffic stop is unpleasant.
It's unpleasant. And we've had people on the show. I always give grief to my buddy Shady. He's a great guy. But he's one of these guys that if you... were arrested and say, geez, you know, I was only going 5 miles over. Well, hell, you broke the law, you should get arrested. Well, of course, one day I get the call, he gets pinched. And he was in a school zone, and evidently he passed the school, and right near the end, He speeds up, but gets a, it sticks the phone to his ear. Of course, some guy pulls him over. Well, you know, I was right at the end of this. Right at the end of the school zone. It didn't hurt anybody. You know, this policeman was an ass. You know, if that had been me, you'd have been reading me the Riot Act. But nobody wants to be pulled. There's always some extenuating service. Even if you're, you know, a PhD, you know, white guy, and you get pulled over, well, hey, somebody else was going faster, you're an idiot. I mean, every single one of these events is not pleasant. Right? And telling your kid, no, you can't go with the other kids tonight because you've been a bleep, is not pleasant. So the question is, what are we going to do? I mean, what are we going to do with the constant back and forth, people in jail, people out, same people, they don't have education, don't have a job. Now, I would love to see the investment here, instead of, like, disbanding the police force, I would love to see some investment, and some states do this, by the way, Nevada does, where the people that are incarcerated, they have schools, they have training. I would love to see, you know, an auto shop over at county jail where you could go there and get your oil changed, for God's sake, or your brakes done. Where you teach guys how to do, you know, have a mechanic, so do something that when guys come out, they can actually get a job. We don't do anything like that. And yet we expect all this to somehow, you know, either go away or we're not noticing it or the police do God knows what. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I drive through, my buddy Robert wanted to give some stuff to, she's been on the show a couple times, Sister Stephanie, she's the one who runs the marathons. And
sure, yep, I remember her.
Terrific. Well, we went over in the hood, and we dropped off all this stuff. And so we're driving down this side street because the one was under construction. Believe me, the side streets over there, you know, you better be a little careful not have your windows open. There in the middle of the street, some guy, standing in his big orange jersey, and obviously, he's the drug dealer. Well, for God's sake, he might as well put a neon sign on his head. He's not being pulled over. Now, is he paying somebody? Or is the alderman getting his take? I mean this, and there's regular people trying to live on that block, Kevin, and we don't. Now, if we arrest this guy, does another guy pop up? Does the younger guy pop up? Do you get a 16-year-old there who goes to juvie court? I mean, these are all, but I don't even know if we have any sort of a mindset. I mean, and on the, you know, on the white side, the people you quote will say, well, throw them all in jail and throw away the key. Then you've got the Kim Fox and Lori Lightfoot that are trolling for those votes that are saying, well, they're not really criminals, let them all out of jail, damn near. I mean, she's not exactly what she said. But, I mean, so we have no, how this gets in the political process and not a serious meeting or series of meetings between all sides to say, what exactly are we going to do here? Are we going to not have white policemen in black communities? I don't think that's the answer, because I'm not so sure. We had a beer with Tripoli last night, and our buddy Eric from the show, African American teacher, author, spectacular dude, he said when he was in Washington, the worst tune-ups he's ever seen given by policemen were white policemen on white guys. Because they were equal opportunity abusers. They were racist.
Oh, and they may well be. Yeah. And I don't doubt that for a minute. I also don't think that, you know, segregation is the answer.
No. In fact, it's absolutely not the answer.
That was something we worked really hard to, you know, to try to eliminate and made steps for in the civil rights movement, was to get rid of segregation. And so now the idea is no white police in the in African-American neighborhoods. That doesn't make sense to me.
No.
Maybe if someone wants to test the theory and, you know, build up a few years' worth of research and see if it makes a difference, you know, have at it on an experimental basis. But I don't see more segregation as the problem to inequality, as the answer to inequality.
Well, you know,
I do have a theory about this, somewhat, and I need to do some research to see if I can support it, and I don't know how much time I'm going to get to do it in the near term, but the idea that I'm thinking is, first of all, you know, as a conservative person, I have a lot of criticism for Democrats because these cities where this stuff keeps happening are all run by Democrats and have been for decades. Now, I'm not saying that if we just gave the keys to the Republicans and said, now you all run it, that it would be any better. What I am saying is that I am very suspicious that one-party rule has allowed the system to become so corrupt because there is nothing to offset it. And so now when you say, is somebody getting paid? Is somebody getting, you know, and there's many ways to get paid. You know, one way is that you have public sector unions that are funding candidates and keeping their coffers, you know, their campaign funds full. And of course, then you're allowed to draw living expenses and things like that out of it. So it really is effectively a money laundering type of scheme in many cases. So, it just creates more opportunity for corruption because there isn't any way to offset it. There's nothing that there's no price to pay, even if the corruption gets exposed, because the same party is going to remain in power. The same mayors are going to keep getting elected, and they're going to keep selecting the police chiefs, and they're going to keep getting the donations from the police unions, and it's just going to be this self-perpetuating cycle. I know there are some cities out there that are not one party ruled. One of them that comes to mind is Indianapolis, and if I remember right, it's a Democrat in office now. His predecessor was a two-term Republican. The predecessor to that was a two-term Democrat, and the predecessor to that was a two-term Republican. So that's an area where I want to go look and see, I know they've managed to stay out of national news for quite a while in terms of anything like what happened in Minneapolis, which is the second one of those in the last couple of years. But what I don't know is what the real data says on that.
Well, two things, though.
So at this point, it's a theory, but that would be one. I think there's a few other cities. You know, Omaha comes to mind. I think they've toggled back and forth. That if you have a healthy second party in the city, maybe that would help a little bit.
I'm going to push back some on that because two reasons. One is there have been an issue in Minnesota. A lot of people. Well, I only know it because I know Dr. J, because he lived up there. And he said in the, it's very liberal-minded, all right, in terms of, they opened up their welfare system very early on, in the 70s, to pretty much, if you crossed the border, you were in. So even though it's very cold, and not many people really want to live there, they have a fairly sizable African-American community that came there just because some states evidently, and I don't know the stories on this, but you had to live in a state a year before you qualified for welfare or food stamps or something. Minnesota had nothing like that. So it really, for a while, was a big destination spot for people that were in trouble. I'm not going to say black people didn't want to work, because I don't think that's the truth. People were in trouble. And there's been this undercurrent of, what the hell are all these people doing here? They wouldn't be here if we weren't giving them stuff for free. There's been that undercurrent for a real long time there. But on your other story, because I read your thing yesterday, and as usual, it was well written, but I'm gonna push back, because I think our differences always come because I always look at the numbers. I'm gonna say, if you put Donald Trump as the mayor of Chicago, because he's very good at this, by the way, he will immediately recognize where the power lies. And it's not in his, somewhat right-wing or whatever white community. Here he's going to recognize where the power lies, and he will be Lori Lightfoot on steroids, pandering to the unions and pandering to everybody else, because that's where the voter base is. And somehow or another, and this I don't get, Kevin, maybe you can tell me, or Jack has an opinion. Obviously, everybody knows that there's these voting, quote, bases. California, I read this once, it can't be right, but actually I read in like two or three spots, that the largest voter base is prison guards, because so many of them have either been there or retired that I can't believe it's bigger than teachers. But the thing I read had teachers second, it can't be right. But anyway, say they're both pretty serious voting blacks. The solution really is, in a democracy, when there is an issue, for somebody to articulate the issue and have, instead of 100,000 teachers and policemen and firemen calling the tune of the election, which they basically did the last time, because only 100,000 people, 90,000 people voted for Lori Lightfoot in the primary, it's for 300,000 other people to say, okay, well, there's 100,000 you, but there's 300,000 us. It never happens, Kevin. Now, the question is why? I mean, the Democratic system, the voting system, no matter Chicago is now going to a non-democratic Republican thing. It's everybody just votes. I mean, you run for mayor as essentially an independent. Everybody knows what your party is, but you run as an independent. I mean, it hasn't changed at all. The fact is, the only way, I mean, these the state pension issues, which are everybody in the country knows about. The state constitution is mandated that every 20 years or something, it needs to be, there's a vote to see if we're going to have another convention, if it needs to be redone again. Okay, everybody sees this problem, yet it was it 5 years ago, 6 years ago? It was voted down. Well, why? All the other people had to do was get off their dead ass and vote the unions down. And they didn't. And yet if, I'm sure if you went back to that vote, you're going to find 30-35%, maybe, I mean, I guess I could research this, maybe voted the election. So how the hell, I mean, it's one thing if you and I have a Stocks and Jacks voting block of 40 people, you know, who've been on the show, or maybe 50 or 100 actually been on ever. Well, that's interesting. But if the other 2 million people don't vote and our voting block actually means something, whose fault is that? Ours or theirs? I mean, how is it that these people continue?
Yeah, but I'm not talking voting block. I'm talking money block.
Well, but it's the same thing. That's my point. It's always the same thing.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't. It's because funding to campaign coffers is not the same as votes.
Well, okay. But it goes hand in hand. I mean, the pension, the fire people downstairs, they're my buddies. We've been up here forever. I walk by and they're going, "Hey, how are you voting on the constitutional thing?" And I go, "Oh, I think we could use a change." "Oh no, here." And they shove something in my hand. The thing in my hand was, the only reason for a constitutional convention is to screw people with pensions out of their pensions. So I'm going to say that all the people who voted, not all, but anybody who had a pension in this state I'm going to say that 60% of the people voted for that reason. But yet it wasn't 8 million people. They could have been trumped by the other people had they read the thing and gotten off their dead ass. But they weren't. So I'm sure that the same group is more than willing to give Jay Pritzker money to say, okay, you can go with the ballot on your graduated income tax, but don't put an amendment on there to say you can decrease pensions. And why does that never make it? Because the same people had voted that time. So Pritzker knows that, hey, he's not going to win. Even if he cared, he's not going to win a general election to have another constitutional convention, whatever that comes up again, 10 years from now or whatever. He also knows that there's no way in hell he's getting an amendment through, because the people in the legislature say, "Hey, wait a minute, my biggest contributors are this teachers union, the police union, somebody, or just plain retired people call me up saying, what are you going to do, screw me, and, you know, in the guy's district." So, I mean, you have people that care. It's like old people have a much higher, I'm going to say, percentage influence on the government than young people, person per person. Why? Because they care. They always vote. That's why you're the gay area in Chicago is a serious political animal, because they vote and they get money.
They vote, and yes, but it's also a demographic that has. That has a lot of money, and a lot of that money goes through. That, you know, you take that back to national. That is exactly why, President Obama, his position evolved on same-sex marriage, is because his bundlers said, until you come out and support us, we aren't, many of them gay, said, until you support us, we're not going to come up with any money for you.
Right, we may vote for you, but we're not going to come up with any money for you.
Yeah, and so, yeah, I realize that the votes and the dollars are intertwined, but my point isn't so much even that, is that there just isn't a functioning Republican Party in Cook County.
Well, I don't disagree.
It doesn't exist. It's a one-party county. So now you're just picking which person from the party. It may be open for the mayoral election. It may be open election, but and anybody can run. But who's there's no backing to it. There's no party backing to anything.
But I think when I argue this with Lou all the time, because he has the same point of view, and I honestly think Kevin, you guys are you're not wrong, but. This has become This is like, who cares what the party is in Nicaragua? You know, the guy's the guy. And the alderman here, he could change parties to the Republican tomorrow. Nobody care. He's just our alderman, and he gets me.
Yeah, except that he would see that would be the last of the money going into his campaign fund.
Yeah, I don't think anybody cares. Richard J. Daley first ran as a Republican for sheriff, just to let people know he was a force. And when he was able to get go outside, then the Democratic Party said, no, we want you back in here because it looks like you can do something on your own. SP Futures up 26. SP Futures up 39. It's ahead of the unemployment employment number. We're supposed to be lousy, but doesn't matter. We just keep going up every day. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it is time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Well, don't fix Texas Giants. I'll come out with Mr. Jack Silverman on the board. SP Futures up 26. NASDAQ Futures up 39. Dow Futures up 313. This is after or ahead of the jobs number. Again, we've got money pouring in from European markets. DAX up 188, 1.5%. FTSE up 73, 1.2%. CAC around up 87, 1.7%. Over in Asia, we've got, yesterday just did a review. We were almost flat. Dow was up 11, S&P down 10, and NASDAQ down 67. So that was a slow day. Today. Actually, the downside a little bit. Nikkei up 167.7%. Shanghai up 11.4. Hang Seng up 404, 1.7. Never mind the fact that their level of, be tossed out. Or have all kinds of problems over there, be invaded. Don't worry about that. 10-year up to 0.87, so the yield's been going up every day here now the last week. I've been stuck at 68 forever, now it's 87. One minus 0.29. Get a load of this. Japan, positive 0.04. Did anybody be sniffing some inflation here? Maybe it's possible, I guess. Oil up 84 cents, 38.25. Brent up 119, 41.18. Natural gas, 183. RBOB, 117. So long, 185 a gallon tax gas for the Suburban. Gold down $19, 1708. This is the most befuddling thing here. After a couple months in a while, it makes a run, but the amount of cash awash in the system, somehow gold is not going up. So I think a couple of countries must be liquidating. It's the only thing I can think of, but, well, we'll see. Silver down 26 cents, 1780. Jack, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
We're looking pretty good to start off the morning on the traffic standpoint. We do have some slight traffic building up on the Stevenson and a little bit more on the Edens heading into the city. For weather, we're looking pretty good this morning. In Chicago, 71 degrees, partly cloudy with a high of 84. And in Phoenix, 88 degrees, partly cloudy with a high of 106. In sports, the NBA has finally announced their return date. Teams will start reporting to Walt Disney in Orlando starting July 9th. Looking to play games starting July 31st. The top 8 teams in each conference will report, and any team currently within 6 games of 8th place will report to Orlando.
Bulls out!
Bulls are out. The only non-current playoff teams that are making the cut are New Orleans, Portland, San Antonio, Sacramento, Phoenix, and Washington. So 22 teams will report, and the number 8 and 9 teams in each conference after the 8-game regular season will, if the 9 seed is within 4 games of the 8 seed, they will play a 3-game, or up to 3 games, or up to 2 games really, where the number 9 seed would need to win both games, while the number 8 seed would only need to win one game to make the playoffs. Chief.
Kevin, I want to shift gears in for a second here. I sent you this thing, I'm not generally a massive fan of Jim Cramer, but I think he's a pretty good guy. He's a friend of John's. And I think he has an amazing mental, filing cabinet of things that I don't. Everybody who runs companies, who the people are, where they came from. I mean, an encyclopedia of somebody who knows probably a lot, way more about individual stocks than I do. I don't know that he knows butkus about some of the stuff that I do, hedging and option trading and so forth, but that's fine. But I mean, he's a good guy, and he came out yesterday and he's talking about, and he's not the first that has said this. And I wonder, Kevin, whenever I see something like this, I'm reminded of what Leroy Jethro Gibbs on NCIS. There are no such things as, I don't believe in circumstances or something like that, whatever he says. He says the pandemic has led to one of the greatest wealth transfers in history. And he's basically saying that big companies have come out virtually unscathed, if not better, and all the mid-sized and smaller companies are either seriously wounded or out of business. And I just wonder, Kevin, is this all random? This can't be random. Are people have to see this and are still, it's still happening. I mean, we are absolutely making sure. I mean, Boeing is up again today. We're making sure that Boeing has, what are we doing? Giving them every nickel they need to not cut anybody's salaries, not do anything. Well, laying off people, that's one thing. You lay off those people on the bottom. The board hasn't gone anywhere for the decision to keep making these stupid planes when they weren't able to fly. The management, well, they lost the one guy, but he went out with a big package. I mean, and look at Amazon. For God's sake, they're borrowing money for nothing. And they're putting people out of business that are being told they can't open. I mean, Kevin, this almost looks like it's totally premeditated by 10 guys in the back room just laughing their ass off. Or am I wrong here?
Well, it could look that way, and I don't know if that's the way it's really happening or not. But the fact is, Kramer isn't wrong about what actually has happened as a result of it, and maybe that's why the markets are up so high so much, is because it's not the kinds of businesses that are listed on the stock exchanges that in general have taken a beating. It's the it's the small business owner, sole proprietorships, small partnerships, those kinds of things that really have been beaten to death. I know I saw something from the local Chamber of Commerce that the state of Indiana has grant money available for any business that's been harmed that had under $5 million in revenue. So maybe there's some hope for some of those businesses to get back on their feet. But for goodness sake, that's exactly where the carnage is.
Yeah.
I don't know how anybody can, I remember as a small business owner who lived through 2008 and had the downturn. You just don't have the wherewithal to sustain it for very long.
Well, every Binney's, and I'm not a big fan of those guys, but every Binney's, I think 20 Binney's is the number I heard. Again, don't quote me on that. Were all looted, and they're all closed. Now, maybe they're reopening today, I don't know, but they were all closed.
JCPenney's?
No, Binney's. Binney's Beverage.
Oh, Binney's. I thought you said Penny's.
No, Binney's Beverage. Now, were they not protected and Costco was? I don't know. I don't know, Costco maybe, I don't know if Costco was looted as well. It could have been, but I mean, are we choosing sides here? I mean, what are we doing here?
We did see many a large chain store.
I understand, but what I'm saying is this is so uneven, Kevin. It almost is like, this morning, Lori Lightfoot, who I'm zero fan of, I mean, there's an essence here. When you're watching Gunsmoke and Matt Dillon, and he, you protected your house with a rifle, right? You didn't, the marshal was 40 miles away. Then all of a sudden we move into cities, move into places, we said, this is not how we want to live. We're gonna have a police force, a professional group that protects people. We're not gonna run around with a bunch of people protecting their own stuff. But the idea is, it's sort of like I was in one basketball game at Mount Greenwood, Kevin, and I always go back to the sports story, and it was this total hack on the other team. And I'm no fighter, but after about four horrendous hacks, no foul called, I said to the referee, I said, look, I'm not here to get hurt. I said, if you're not going to protect me, I'm going to. It's your choice. I mean, the next time this guy nails me, if you don't call a foul, I'm nailing him. And the guy like teased me up. Well, okay, fine. But the fact is, I mean, there's a group of people in Bridgeport. Bridgeport has their history of whatever, and they're patrolling their neighborhood last night with bats or if somebody I could see very easily somebody boarding their place up, saying, "Man with gun inside, enter at your own risk." Because right now, the society has told you that I don't know if it's sympathy that somehow she thinks all these protesters are good people, well, most of them are, that somehow or another that she can't, I don't know what the story is. The fact is, people were not protected, Kevin. Now, there's going to be a pushback the other way. And for her to not realize that, how do you not realize that? Okay, if you're not going to protect me, I'm going to protect me. How do you not expect that? I guess my question.
Well, and you've seen some of the numbers on the number of guns sold in the last, certainly in the last week and a half, but also the number of guns sold, over the last couple of months.
I mean, I don't see how you don't.
Because, over the last couple of months, it's sort of that reaction to saying, well, I'm not, if they're going to lock me up, what else are they going to do? And I get that, but more recently, what we've learned is they're not going to protect us. You had cities just saying, let them go.
Yeah. And you had.
And, one of the guys, now, if you're saying you're not going to protect us, then yeah, I'm going to have my own guns.
when I heard a couple of people they're interviewing, one African American guy, one, you know, a white lady who was very much into the protest, both of them said, if you don't get a little broken glass, nobody notices. That's pretty interesting. As long as it's not your broken glass.
There's actually, there's been a whole lot of, that opinion, and it's really bizarre. Especially considering that the people damaged most are the ones that the protesters supposedly on behalf of the people who are suffering from the damage the most.
Well, and I will say this on the air, the 50 swinging idiots that were at the male and female, white and black, that were at the South Side for Dunbar Hyde Park, and they're in the back row with their cell phones over their head, right? Cameras going, and. I'm just saying, Kevin, just saying that everyone to a person wanted something bad to break out, because what's the point of being there if it's really peaceful, it's too boring? Just saying.
Yeah, so we got to get out the Iggy Pop on board.
Yeah.
I mean, chairman of the board.
But I could see somebody. I wouldn't do this, but I could see somebody, you know, boarding up their place, saying, front door is open, machine gun inside, come on in.
Yeah, well, we're going to see something like that, and it's yes, we're begging for that kind of an incident.
And then
we're just begging for it. And look, the idea that it's not only we're not only getting support for violence from from the fringes, we're getting it from the mainstream.
Well,
And that's a little weird too, don't you think?
Yeah, I'm just curious, Kevin. As I say this all the time because it's unfortunately true. My thought process, and I can blame a lot of things on George Stigler. The fact that when I talk now, I back up and tell a story before the story. That's what he used to do. But he always would say when he was a behavioral political economist. I couldn't wait to get to his class. I took two classes from him. I mean, one of the most fascinating minds I've ever come across. I mean, Milton Friedman in his own way was probably smarter, maybe. There's a statement. But there's no question who you'd rather sit there and listen to. I mean, one wasn't all formulas and everything, the other guy. But Stigler would actually look at the money, and he would predict how people were going to behave. I mean, he would, like, predict, if he looked at it. I did this after being in his class. You look at a Caprini Green and you say, somehow, I don't know how, a Wicked Witch of the West or the Wicked Witch of the East, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, this is not going to be here. The property is just too valuable. The city's going to find a way to move these people the hell out of here because they don't, quote, belong here economically. And somehow or not, and sure enough, Kevin, 20 years later, it was gone. I mean, you can't tell the date. You can't say whether the market's going to be up or not today, but you can say stuff like, "God, if we keep doubling the money supply every year, we're going to have some inflation somewhere." I don't know when that day is. I don't know when the headline's going to come. My people that I manage money for sure wish I could tell them the day where we only made one day to trade the day before and triple our dough, but it's hard to. But I mean, right now, I listened to Danny Davis the other night, and he was talking about the Martin Luther King riots. I don't know if you remember, I mentioned this with Lou yesterday. He was on Roosevelt Road, and he was pointing to this area where all these businesses and houses evidently used to be. I don't remember Roosevelt Road in 1968. He goes, this was my neighborhood. He goes, this stuff never came back. None of those people reopened. The businesses eventually got torn down. Other people took advantage of it. Their places, bigger people, took advantage of it. Their places weren't torn down, and all of a sudden they got more of the business, and these places never came back. Now, you wonder, time after time, if some of that, I won't say isn't prearranged. I'm not saying the president of Costco is dying to see some guy's place go up in smoke. But I don't think it's all that, you know what I'm saying, Kevin? The same people win every time. And the story is, the top 100 stocks, maybe, they shouldn't be going up this much because of what the Fed's doing, but they probably should be going up. Because guess what? They now just got a higher percentage of whatever the business is.
Right, they just got share.
Yeah, they just got more share.
And large businesses play share more than anything else anyway.
But I also,
you know, when you run a small business, you're not doing market share. you're measuring cash flow.
Yeah.
You just care. You know, is there more money in my pocket today than there was yesterday?
But you wonder, Kevin, what exactly? I mean, we're supposed to have in the world we're in, when you trade the markets, you especially look. And I'll always say, Pete Najarian, who I love, smart guy, you know, said that he had no reason why Bear Stearns was down from $65 to $32 in 2008, and it had to be a buy there. Well, of course, 2 days later, it was $5. And now, is Pete an idiot? No, he's not. Pete has some confidence that if Bear Stearns would have had, you know, 15 or 20 or 100 off-balance sheet companies like Enron, it's somewhere in the audit system of, quote, the SEC and the NASDAQ, because they beat the hell out of small firms like us, somebody would have noticed that. I can't imagine PTI having five other companies somehow buried on the balance sheet when they come in here and they're worried about Audrey's real estate, you know, and me doing the show. Obviously, they don't take that sort of scrutiny to a Bear Stearns. So I don't know how much money Pete cost people by doing that, but I don't blame him. Why would he think that some firm was able to duck all that stuff and all of a sudden just be broke? And you know, what was going on behind the scenes? I'm just glad it wasn't me that said that on national TV. I mean, but yet, why would I have thought that Bear Stearns was a fine, you know, doing everything fine, it seemed to me, passing all their audits, doing all the stuff, never anything that I heard of by any of the regulators, all of a sudden be this horrendous operation with all these little balance sheet things going, and little companies going somewhere else where people are invested in and they're part of and guaranteed. Why would I ever have thought of that, Kevin? Now I'm looking at this United Airlines. Okay, it looks to me, and again, I hope that the business comes back and somehow they get some loans and the government helps them out and they save the shareholders and save everybody. This stock is going up 10, 15, 20% a day. Something somewhere, there's something going on behind the curtain here, Kevin, but because to my knowledge, the place is flat ass.
Pay no attention to that man.
Yeah, the place is flat ass broke. They are flat ass broke. And I know they got loans, but loans are just loans. They're not. I mean, I don't see any chance here. If you look at the news that is available to the public, like me and you, I see zero chance that this company. Well, I see maybe a 50% chance that the stock survives. Maybe. And that's what seriously low income loans from the government that maybe are, we're talking about. I look at these guys a year from now losing money every day, maybe 2 years. And today they can say how, you know, we went from 85% vacancies on planes to 84. Well, swell. But I mean, all of a sudden the thing's up. And what does somebody know that I don't know? I mean, are we guaranteeing these guys? What are we going to do? We're going to give them $800 billion? What are we going to give them? American Airlines was up like 40% yesterday. What went on behind the scenes yesterday morning that everybody seemed to know except me, even though I'm reading as much as I can, and virtually every other investor that I know? Because everybody sends me mail all day long about stuff they find out, so I have people helping me from the show and other places. I don't think there's a soul on earth that can tell you why these stocks are going up that much. And it's not because... Then they had one of the guys on CNBC was asked why they're going up, and he goes, well, business was down 90%, now it's down 88%. Sorry, Steve. That's not a reason for going up 40% in one day, is it?
I hope not, because there's no logic behind it. But, unless they know that the competition is failing.
Well, there's only four players. There's only four companies.
Does United Airlines have enough cash to withstand this? And
the answer is no.
Don't? I mean, that would be, you know, my question, and nobody has enough cash to withstand negative cash flow forever.
No, and how is Boeing? Boeing's got to be up, what are they up, 40-50% in the last 3 days. I mean, you can't tell me there's not a, quote, deal with Boeing. Now, something's going on that somebody knows about that we don't. Because clearly, just, you know, the usual routine, they laid off how many thousand people. And every stack goes up when you lay people off. It's stunning to me, Kevin. No matter who it is, even in a place that's bloated, I don't know of anybody who really. I hope not that anybody's ever gone to work and done absolutely nothing. I mean, you do something.
Only in the government.
So when you lay people off, well, I was going to say, I was at work at one school, And there was a guy, I think I saw him once, Kevin, in the summer I was there. I was there for 8 weeks. I knew his name was, they called him Junior. I could tell where he was because he smoked every cigarette down absolutely to the filter. So I could tell when I'd see the little brown filter, that was his cigarette. The guy, the only thing he did all day long was put the flag up and put the flag down. I don't know where he was. I never saw him. I did all the other stuff. I varnished and scrubbed the entire building. I never saw the guy. And I said, you know, after 3 or 4 days, I said to the engineer, if he does show up, I don't want him anywhere near me. Just let me do it. I'm fine with it. Because it wasn't that big of a deal for a guy who was 20. And, he's the only guy, but even he did the flag. You know, but he had one job that he did. But it's hard for me to imagine. I mean, every time, why doesn't so even people that own stock, why don't people realize that if you got 10,000 people working there and you fire 1,000, they're doing something. So if the other 9,000 have to pick up whatever the 1,000 are doing and you don't give them a raise, you essentially not only fired somebody, you lowered the wages of everybody else in the place, right?
Well, yeah.
But, I mean, and yet we do this time and again and we think it's a good thing. And at the end of the day, we wonder why people are buying crappy jeans from China for $40 instead of jeans here for $80. I mean, why?
Well, and Tom, it should be an event that really means your place is mismanaged, not that, and therefore, why would I invest? Rather than you've cut to the bone, and therefore. Therefore, your stock should go up. It shouldn't. It's the other way. It's just saying you've been mismanaging your place. It might be about time you did something, but it also, you know, you have the question: how did you get here?
Well, I remember my stepfather, who always had. You know, I got a lot of this from him, to be honest. Even though I grump about him all the time, he was a guy that he was. This is interesting, Kevin, because you met him. He could be the world's grumpiest Irishman that ever walked, except for his father, who I think was worse. But he would tell me, he said, you know, I was in the Army. And he goes, everybody should be in the Army. This is Walt talking. And he goes, because you learn how to work with people that you never thought you would, of different colors, different backgrounds. He goes, you don't even have to like him. You learn to work with him. And he would have, I mean, it was interesting. This is back in the, you know, 60s and 70s, he was a controller. He became, you know, VP of finance in a couple of places. And even my mother used to say, he doesn't care what anybody looks like, what color they are. If they do the job for him, he gives them the job. He could care less. And one day, this guy shows up and he says, you need to cut two people. And he goes, all my people are working. I can't cut two people. The guy says, well, you got to cut two people. He says, okay, fine. So they brought him into, they used to have big rooms where everybody's, you know, accountants would all be hanging there and they're all banging on their calculators, not like today. He goes, all right, here's my 10 guys. Name me one of them who isn't working. They're all banging away on their machines, doing whatever it is they did. Could you tell me which one to get rid of and who's going to pick up his job? The guy looked at him and he said, well, you know, maybe we won't lay anybody off in your department and turn around. I mean, what if your place is run right, how do you lay people off?
Well, and I've lived that too, because my attitude was, once you've been through a big wave of across the board cuts, you never want to do that again. You never want to be a part of it, because not only do you is it painful at the time, but you totally undermine the trust that you've built with your team. So, you know, that comes off the board too, and nobody wants that. There's a long road to recovery to get back to the point where people actually have some faith in their management again. So I always ran my departments really lean, and it always frosted me when they'd come to me and say, we're doing some cuts. You have to cough up somebody. And I would have that same conversation you just described, where I would say, look, I've been keeping it lean all along. I ain't your problem.
Well, I think
people have come to me and said, you know, you can add somebody if you want. And I said, no, I don't need it. We're doing fine.
Well, was it the quote that I sent you, the John Wayne quote, something about when the world has gone mad, maybe we should think of mad solutions, something like that? I really think that while all this is happening, the protests, the discrimination, some yes, some no, I honestly believe, Kevin, and we need this, some solutions like, let's get some people out of those neighborhoods. Let's get some other people out of other neighborhoods. Let's have a voluntary, I mean, I'm not going to draft anybody, where we're going to take 100 kids from Chicago and send them to a national park, and we're going to work on stuff there. We're going to do some environmental experiments on planting stuff and different things, see how we get oxygen plume and work on the global warming. We can do some stuff and bring some people with where they learn how to, and if it doesn't work after summer, we'll bag it. But we need to try something to where people get to meet other people and work with them.
Well, it's too bad we're in our last minute, yeah, because I could talk to you about an internship plan that, you know, where we're a partner with an outfit in Elkhart County called the Horizon Educational Alliance, where they're not doing that. What they are doing is setting up via the high schools internships where the kids, they actually sign contracts, agreements. They're too young to sign contracts that are legally binding, but they will work up to 20 hours a week someplace, get both dual credit, high school and college, and they're, you know, they're totally exposed to the world of work while they're going to school, and they're in fields like IT, robotics, healthcare, and so on. So they get a chance to get a taste of what some of the world of work is like. And I'm such a big fan of those kind of programs.
All right, so I'm talking planting trees, and you're talking robotics. We're kind of in a
but it doesn't matter.
I know. I agree.
Fine.
I agree. I couldn't teach
it's real work.
Yeah, but I could maybe teach the plant and trees part. I don't think I could teach the robotics part. Maybe you could. Just saying.
I can't teach robotics, but I have counterparts who can.
All right. Well, we'll talk on Wednesday. Have a nice weekend. But it's supposed to be nice weather. Jack just mentioned that to us. SP Futures up 25. We come back, we'll have Mr. Carl Denninger.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it is time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But if you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty and the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes, have you been frustrated by the lack of income your investments have provided? If you have answered yes to either of these questions, then we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities, as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. So please give me a call at 602-298-1278, 602-298-1278, so that I can explain further the benefits that PTI can offer you and your portfolio.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs, or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Jack Silverman on the board. We also have Mr. Carl Denninger. S&P futures up 26. NASDAQ futures up 18. We're proving that we're not sure what deals Boeing and United, a couple of these guys, have cut in the last few days, but no stocks go up this much unless something happened that the rest of us don't know about. Just saying. Carl, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great.
So what do you suppose Boeing got out of Trump, who ran on a platform that he was going to spank him because they were charging too much for Air Force One?
Well, I don't know, but, you know, that's not the only company that has had rather inexplicable spikes and on volume, which, of course, you know, is always the tell, right? I mean, if you have a move where there's no volume, then very small amounts of money can, you know, make big things happen in terms of price. But when there's volume behind something, that's usually not the case.
Milton Friedman would disagree with you, by the way.
Well, I know, you know, there's, you've got all these people are, you know, the market is always efficient. Well, that in the slightly longer term, that may very well be true.
Well, his point would be that if a company found a gold mine overnight and it was worth double the next day and it opened up double, what difference does it make how many shares opened up double? It's just worth double.
Well, I understand that, but the point, I guess, is that, Friedman may have been right in that regard. However, the premise of efficient markets is not supposed to be that certain people get to hose everybody else because they have the information first.
I would say, Carl, that, and again, I had him for class at least once, maybe twice, it's been so foggy, but I went to every lecture the guy had and I read pretty much everything he was producing at the time. And I will say that I thought that he was right just about all the time back then. But if you look at what he said and why and the concept or the world he was living in, a lot of the stuff he said is absolutely wrong today. And I think a lot of what these people, when I came out of Chicago, I don't know if I mentioned this before when you were on, but I was one of these guys that was all involved in monetary theory and the efficient markets hypothesis. And if you were the chairman of IBM and you had, you know, some bad child the night before on a can in the morning, the whole world knew about it, and the stock could be down $2. I mean, I was that much of a believer. And now I'm absolutely convinced that whatever we used to have with the market being the arbiter of all news and all events, it's gone. Because I think there's an amazing amount of information that's front run, that's behind the scenes that people don't get. And people love it. And you see the stuff I was going to mention before you came in. Jim Cramer is talking about this is the greatest wealth transfer in history, one of the greatest, that the people who are winners in this pandemic, how the big are totally unfazed, they're better off because they're getting money for nothing, and the other people are just dead. And how it's incredible how this has happened. It's almost like it's premeditated.
Well, this is one of the things I've been pointing out now for a while, ever since this thing started, which is that the data did not support any of the things that were done. Okay? And I was called all sorts of names, you know, oh, you're a denier, da-da-da-da-da. Well, okay, how's this working out for everybody? Because in 2018, we had a very bad flu season. And through the first 20 weeks of 2018 versus 2019, there were 115,000 more people that died. All right, now that's about the same number of people that this virus has killed, right? About 100,000 people in the United States. All right, by the end of the 52 weeks, 2019 recorded 11,000 more deaths. So all that bad flu season did was kill people that were going to die within the next month or two anyway. All right?
Now, it sounds,
the data we are now getting from the CDC, this is not my data, this is the government's data, says that the same thing's happening again. Now, it's not proved yet, and it won't be for a little while because, you know, reporting is slow, right? I mean, what the federal government gets on when people die and stuff like that is, you know, is a few weeks behind when it actually happens. So the report that you have from week 21 does not include all the people who kicked it in week 21. All right? And over the next couple of weeks, that data will get picked up and added back in. But the pattern is the same. And if that ends up being the case, that there is little or no actual excess death when we get to the end of this year, people need to hang for this because we destroyed the economy on purpose, on a fraud. And when you then you have to add into this two other things, which is in the last 48 hours, two studies, one that said that the hydroxychloroquine was worthless and, in fact, harmful, and one that said that ACE inhibitors, which are taken by a huge percentage of the population, were not dangerous. Okay, now there was a very early hypothesis that these drugs were part of the reason that people that had high blood pressure and things like this were being killed by this bug at an accelerated rate. And from a medical perspective, it makes sense. But there was a study in the New England Journal of Medicine that said, nope, sorry, that's not true. There's no correlation. There's no causation. It's debunked. That one was withdrawn yesterday as well. And both of those studies came from a data set from a company that has refused to release the data, the audit reports, and got caught playing with the information.
What do you make of the Spanish study that just came out?
Well, see, the problem is I throw shade at this point at anything that's coming out of any of these areas that, you know, and part of the problem is we've changed how we do things in this country when it comes to this information. We now have pre-publication, pre-review, where these things have not gone through peer review yet. They're being put out there and they're being used to set policy and change people's decision making.
And they're also being
trumpeted when they go the right way based on what somebody wants in the media, and when they get disproved later, no one says a word.
Right. Oh, yeah. I agree.
All right. Well, this is a huge problem because there's another drug out there called Invectrin that's been around forever. It's an antiparasitic. Okay. A few years ago, there was actually an article that was written that says that this drug is so safe that it can be dispensed by people who are illiterate with a minor amount of training. And it has been used, the amount of benefit that this drug has done for people in third world countries in terms of getting rid of parasitic infections that blind people and produce incredible amounts of pain, suffering, and debilitation is just amazing. All right. I mean, it is probably one of three or four things you can actually call a wonder drug. Penicillin, of course, being the other obvious one. Now there is data coming out of India where, of course, you know, they got a lot of very poor people, right? Not a lot of money. That this drug actually works against coronavirus. And again, it's so cheap, and it's another one that we have a couple of decades worth of knowledge on.
We don't want that. If it's cheap, we don't want that. We want something that'll be $1,000 a shot or something, or $2,000.
Well, yeah, and here's the other thing. Remdesivir, remember, this was supposed to be the savior, right? This was the antiretroviral that was going to save everything. As it turns out, that drug has now failed two statistical significance tests. Not one, two. Neither one was very heavily reported, but of course the original preliminary data before peer review, before we actually could compute a statistical significance, that was great, and that sent Gilead stock
way up.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
Well, the manipulation on these stocks is dramatic. How the Moderna people are not in jail, I have no idea.
Well, I'd like to know how a lot of people are not in jail, because when you get down to it, you look at the damage that's been done to the economy, okay, and the prediction of doom that has come. Hey, you know, if you reopen your economy, by God, you're going to need refrigerator trucks all the way down the middle of you know, the street in Atlanta from all the deaths that are going to happen. It didn't happen, did it? Okay, we had this huge party at the Lake of the Ozarks, and we actually had an index case, a real no BS proved infected person who was at those parties and at those bars. No social distancing, everybody's all over the place. The place was a mob scene, for crying out loud. You know that there has not been one additional cross-infection that occurred from that? And there was an actual index case that was there.
Well, they weren't kissers like the group they had from Europe at the, was it the Boston Scientific thing in Boston?
Look, don't get me wrong. This bug is bad news if it gets you, okay? But that does not justify what has been done here.
Right, it's
and
a
the
bug.
Data, as it comes in, keeps supporting what I've been saying since February, which is that the data, all of the premises that were put forward, there's no cross-immunity, everyone's susceptible, you know, all this stuff, every single one of these arguments has been blown up over time.
Well, most of them, the real nuts and bolts of this has not been blown up. I don't know if you were one of the guys who sent me the original German or South Korean study that I read, you know, when this all started. In April, well, it started long before April. We started actually in March, early March, and where the idea is. And the minute I read it, I'm just looking at this going, and I've said this 100 times because it bears listening to, is that it's a disease like no other, in the sense that people are amazingly contagious that don't even have symptoms. Where I don't know, I'm sure some doctor could tell me there's been another disease. When I first read those first two studies, I'm like, we're never going to contain this. I mean,
but here's the thing. It's not, you know, part of the reason we shut down the schools, okay, is because we were very concerned that the schools, as with flu, as is true with flu, were going to be the vector that was going to put this thing into, you know, into the general population, right, going to kill everybody, okay? As it turns out, there was never any evidence that school children, although they get it, they don't get sick, there was never any evidence that they were actually an efficient vector to give it to other people. And Finland has now proved this because they reopened their schools and they saw no evidence. And this is interesting. There's not been one documented case of a child transmitting this virus to someone else. Not one.
Well, the Spanish study just came out, Crown View, I don't know if you caught it, it was just the last couple of days. They did a 60,000 person random study, which is pretty good. And evidently everybody liked their protocol or whatever tests they used and so forth. The good news, or there's good news and bad news up and down the line. They claim that only 5% of the population so far has been affected, either had it or has it. Which is
right.
Which leaves you 95% to go. So it's clearly not herd immunity at that point. But they claimed that 30% of the people that they tested and had antibodies said, "Man, I never felt sick a day."
Right, I never even sneezed.
Yeah, I never even sneezed.
This is one of the things that I pointed out a couple of months ago, is that a very good friend of mine's grandfather was killed by this thing. His grandmother popped a positive test, but she never even sneezed, and they were both in their 90s. Okay, so both of these people had, you know, all of the comorbidities that, you know, are supposed to make this, you know, this thing's going to kill you, right? Not necessarily. It got him, but she never even sneezed.
Well, the families that I've heard, and this is some of my Hispanic friends, because it's, you know, it's pretty rampant in the Hispanic community here. They say, yeah, my brother-in-law had it. He actually was in the hospital. He's 60-ish, because he was in the hospital a couple of days. He's okay now. His wife had some symptoms, had a fever. Kids test positive, they never knew they had it.
And right.
That's pretty much, obviously there's going to be some younger people with effects and blah, blah, blah. There's always going to be a few. But by and large, that appears to be the modus operandi. But the Spanish study is, if you got people walking around, I mean, the thing about the flu, that, I mean, no matter what, even in the days when everybody in the OEX pit would be coughing on everybody else with a cold or something. If you had the flu, you were home. If you had a 102 fever or something, you weren't standing there next. But the same thing with SARS. The thing that saved everybody with SARS was if you had it, you knew it. You went to the doctor or the hospital, right?
Well, yeah, you got so sick so fast that you know, you weren't walking around in the middle of, you know, downtown Chicago giving it to everybody around you.
Well, let's shift gears a little bit, Carl. I mean, what do you suppose has caused? What's going on that all of a sudden has Boeing up, you know, 40% in 3 days, or, you know, 35%? Why is United Airlines going up? You know, they're going up. They're 14% up this morning. Yesterday, American Airlines. I look at these balance sheets. I look at these numbers. What is somebody seeing here that their calculator is doing a different job than mine?
Well, I'll tell you what this is going to be maybe a little controversial, but then again, we're all good for that around here, right? So I think what you've got is people are looking at what's been going on with the little boogaloo game that's been happening in all the major cities. Okay, you know, you got rioting and looting and no social distancing, right? Obviously, right? Rioters don't pay much attention to things like that. You know, smashing storefronts on Mag Mile and stealing all the shoes in the Nike place and things like this. All right. Well, guess what? If there is no large spike in coronavirus over the next week, the number of people who are going to be willing to wear a mask and put up with any more of this BS from any of the governors is going to go to zero. And as soon as that happens, all the travel and leisure and entertainment companies, they're back in business, aren't they?
Well, that's my point, Carl. I mean, first of all, I hope for that, and I get that. But we're in a situation where if it's Carl and Chief's Saloon, and all of a sudden now in the last 2 days we've opened up to 25% of the normal people, and guess what? Everybody's cheering, and we look at the cash register tape today, and we said, we still lost friggin' money yesterday. Even though we're happy to be open, we're still done. I mean, I don't see...
Oh no! I think the point that I'm trying to make here, and what I've been pointing out is that's not how this is going to go down. All right? If we have another couple of weeks that go by, and there is no huge spike, not small increases, but you know, monstrous kind of exponential, you know, logarithmic blow up that everybody said was going to happen if we didn't obey these restrictions, these 50% occupancy and everyone wears masks and gloves and blah 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 blah. All right. Well, nobody did. Everybody went out. There were tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people across the country in enclaves that did this. Every major city, basically, at this point,
right,
over the last couple of weeks. If we do not see that spike, your local bar owner is going to tell the governor to go suck a goat.
He's
going to take down all the signs and take off all the X's off of the front of his place, and he's going to open it, and he's going to tell everybody to go to hell. And the people are going to come back out, and they're going to, because look, the proof is there, all right? I don't care what you try to tell people and how much you scare people. At some point, people are going to say, look, half the population in these areas showed up at these so-called demonstrations, whether they were violent or not, right? And there's no disease.
Right.
So go bite me. I'm not listening to you.
Well, I'm going to get back to the investment part. I don't see in this day and age, this is an information age, this Twitter age, everybody's supposed to know everything about everything, right? I have not been able to find out anywhere of a solid, I mean, maybe it's there someplace and I just don't have the right research people or me. I don't see how the hell Boeing, I mean, as big a company as they are, they gave them the billions of dollars of contract for the B-52s that nobody cares about, and they give them, you know, we keep the Export-Import Bank open just for them. I mean, I get all that. But we're talking about 400 and some planes at $200 million a pop sitting on the ground going nowhere for any time soon. And who knows how much it's going to take to get one of those things in the air once you get the all clear, if you get the all clear. And by the way, who the hell is going to buy them? Since we're shutting down China and other places. I don't see, just following the numbers, because I did this for Pullman. And I said, Carl, get a load of this. I mean, this is a little story of my... The controller knew that I knew people at all the different plants and had inroads. I was one of those kind of guys. He goes, without telling anybody else, I want you to do an estimate of both of these contracts. How long is it going to take? I said, I can have it back to you in a week. I talked to everybody. I came back. I did the numbers three different times. They were telling the auditors. We were Ernst & Young, Ernst & Ernst, I think, might have been at the time, that we were break even. I said, we're going to lose $1 million a car in the Amtrak cars. We're going to lose, you know, whatever, $500,000 a car in the Boston cars. And he goes, are you right about this? I go, Rob, I did it three ways, no matter how you do it. If you do it by labor hours, if you do it by just time and how much we're spending per day, I forget what the third one was. I was pretty good at this at the time. So no matter what you do, it comes up with the same number. And he goes, how many copies you got? I go, one for me, one for you. He goes, mine's going in the bottom drawer. He goes, so's yours. I mean, yeah. I don't see how you can sit there and say the amount of money United is losing per day. I don't see where the end game is that we're going
to. You know what? I don't either. And that's, I mean, you know, I've looked at just the data that we're going to get here in another 5 minutes, right? You know, the labor numbers.
Yep.
The sample week was right into the maw of the worst of the lockdowns. All right. So you are going to see a number, if it doesn't shock, I'm going to be very surprised, right? Especially the household survey. I don't know what they're going to do with their birth, death number, and all the other BS that comes out of the establishment. But the household survey, the unadjusted number, is going to be hideous. On the other hand, because it's right in the middle of it. I mean, this is the sample week that's going to be there. On the other hand, what the market is looking at, if you want my opinion, is they're looking at this information and saying that businesses, regardless of what governors say, regardless of what Trump says, regardless of what Fauci says, regardless of what Burke says, regardless of how many clutching pearls people we have out there, they are all going to tell all these people to go to hell. And they're going to do it fairly soon, and as a result, what you're pricing into the market is that. Now, is that right or wrong? I don't know. But I mean, you know, I made a note on my forum the other day. I said, look, if you believe that there is going to be no huge spike, the things you buy right now are the things that have been just pounded into the dirt. Companies like cruise lines, okay? Who's going to take a cruise, right, in an environment like this? The answer you'd think would be nobody. But that's where the biggest opportunity is. And is it right or wrong? Who knows? I mean, that's the problem you have right now, though, is that somebody has made the decision that this is the way this thing is going to play. And I mean, objectively, 6 months or a year from now, I think there's a big problem. I think you're going to get into 2021, and maybe before then, because this next quarter, everybody knows, is blown up, right, at the end of the month. Yeah. It's going to stink because that's the middle of the lockdown. I think what you're going to see, though, is as we get a little bit further down the road, as we get into fourth quarter, first quarter next year, these chickens are going to all come home to roost because the rebound that everybody is expecting, the V-shaped nonsense, the costs are still there, the profits are not. And what do you buy stocks for, right?
Well,
so, I mean, the echo crash, I think, is coming.
Right, we're two ships.
But not tomorrow.
We were two ships thoughtfully here, kind of passing in the night. I 100% agree with you that even if you look at airline travel down 90%, now it's down, you know, 86%. Of course.
Right.
Of course. But of course, that's progress. And I agree with everybody. Everybody thinks I'm always, you know, glass half empty. I'm not. I mean, I'm fully aware, or think I'm aware, sure as hell to God hope I'm aware, that 2 years from now, 3 years from now, United Airlines will be the friendly skies and people will be flying them without a problem. I honestly believe that. That doesn't mean that given the hole that there is right now, just like 20 years ago, that the current shareholders either survive or get out with any. They don't pay a dividend for the next decade. I mean, just because I think they will, the cruise ships, is there going to be a cruise again? Yes. Does my 100 shares of stock in Carnival Cruise, is it going to be worth anything in the meantime? That's a wholly different question, Carl. That's the one that I feel like I'm the only one asking.
You know? Well, you know, we saw this, when the 2008 stuff started.
Yeah.
There were, my father at the time was still alive, and he had notes from GMAC that were paying a nice dividend. He was using them as an income source. And I told him, I said, you need to get rid of those. you need to sell them, like, now. And he's like, well, why? You know, the government's not going to let them go out of business. That doesn't have anything to do with it. GM will not go out of business, but the value of what you're holding can be zero, and the company's still there.
Well, that's right. I mean, I do some work for a couple other groups that I essentially subcontract my Protect and Index program, which is a lot of people are piling in now. I mean, I'm putting money to work every day, Carl. It's crazy. But one of the guys who works is a younger guy, and he kind of leans on me for advice, and he goes, I got a guy coming in with all these Boeing bonds, and I can get 99.5 for him. Should I sell him? I go, yeah. Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
like tomorrow.
I'm not making a prediction, but out of all the bonds out there, what do you want those for? I mean, I'd say there's probably a 90% chance they're okay, but that's not good enough. Right.
Right. Well, the problem is if they're not, you're going to find out without any real warning.
Right.
And that's what ended up happening with the GMAC stuff was he dumped it, and it was a good thing. It was about $500,000, and it ended up being a zero.
Right. Oh yeah. And so you never. I mean, I screwed up for a decade managing money, Carl, because I refused to put people's money in the tobacco stocks. I mean, even though I guess I had my moral problem with it, but either way. How can I explain to a client that, but there's 50 court cases going on every given day for these people? Well, what do I need to be in here for? They could actually lose one of them, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so like, yeah, why do I need to be, out of all the stuff that I could put money in for people today, why would I pick United? I might pick the transportation average, because there's always going to be airlines, right?
Right.
But why do I pick, of course, Boeing, there is no other builder. So the government will do
it. And that's the other thing that's kind of nice is that I think there's, the numbers are early.
Yeah, well, no.
Oh, no, they're right on time.
Right on time. Well, we'll hang in for a second, Jack, then we'll go to break after we see the numbers.
Up by 2.5 million.
Wow.
And unemployment down. All right, I got to dig into this.
We'll go to break. We'll come back with these. What were we supposed to be? Down what? Down 2.5?
Down a lot.
Yeah. Dow's up 4-something. We'll be right back with all the news that's fit to print. Stack the jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause. Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hold on to your seats, everybody. CPI, or not CPI, the jobs report, supposed to be down like 2.5-3 million, whatever you looked at. A positive 2.5 million. Unemployment rate was supposed to be 20, it's like 13. Carl's digging through those numbers. They seem somewhat, well, it's not somewhat surprising. They are seriously surprising. So we got the Dow, the S&P up 46, NASDAQ up 33, kind of dragging on the NASDAQ. Big companies are leading this train. Dow's up 500 almost exactly. Over in Europe, we got the DAX up. Now, these guys might be a little bit behind. 187, 1.5%. FTSE up 57, it's 1%. CAC around up 88, 1.7%. In Asia, we got the Nikkei up 167.7. Shanghai up 11.4. Hang Seng up 404, 1.7. We've got bonds. 10-year, 0.94. It's up 12 basis points. It's a 10-year jump the highest level since March, so it's up there. The Bund, minus 0.25 in Japan. Plus 0.04. We're going to get Carl's reaction to that when we get back. Oil up $1.24, $38.65. Brent up $161, $41.60. Natural gas up 2 cents. $1.84. RBOB 118. Gold going the other way. Minus 23 bucks. 1703. Silver down 30 cents. Copper up 4 cents. 253. I should have gotten more of that copper company. I did not. Tried to be cheap on it. And so just grab the darn thing. So, Jack, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
We're looking pretty good to start with traffic. We have no accidents to report. However, we do have some traffic on the Edens coming into the city from the south. Everything else is looking all good, though. For weather in Chicago, it's currently 74 degrees, partly cloudy with a high of 84. And in Phoenix, it is 84 degrees, partly cloudy with a high of 106. In sports, as the MLB has pitted their owners against its players with no resolution in sight, the NBA has approved its plan to return, as 22 teams will be going to Walt Disney in Orlando starting July 9th to play their 8-game regular season, followed by the playoffs starting July 31st. Chief.
That seems odd to me, but let's get back to Carl and these numbers. Carl, WTF.
Okay, so, household survey, largest positive number month over month anywhere in my table, 4.1 million. Okay, never seen that one before. This goes all the way back to 1999, by the way.
Yeah.
Never seen anything like that. The other interesting thing is about half of them came out of the not in labor force number.
Right.
Okay, which is that's very different than what we saw during the 08-09 crash, where anybody that got added into there was amazingly sticky.
Well,
okay, not
okay,
so much this time. About half of the gain in the employment number came from there, which is that is a positive thing. The negative, there's two other confounding factors too. Hours worked were up substantially, five ticks. Okay, half an hour. That is, each of those ticks is good for a couple hundred thousand employees in terms of economic impact. So that's another million that, in terms of economic impact, to get added to the number. The bad news is hourly earnings were down by about a quarter. So that's the counterbalance to it. So that blunts some of that economic impact a little bit. But am I shocked that the Dow futures are up 600 points? No. By the way, the Russell futures are up 3.5%.
Right.
Okay. Do you think somebody had these numbers a few days ago?
I think so.
No, given the move in some of these stocks, do you think that now there's your explanation? You know, I've been spitballing. People think it's a protest. Maybe not.
Okay. Well, let's. Instead of we're being, well, the world is being giddier, all right, so that's fine. But now, just as a frame of reference here, and I know my number is a little different than yours, I got a different page than you, but in March, we had 7 million unemployed.
Right.
We bumped to 23, and now we're at essentially 21. These are unemployed people.
Oh, yeah, no, if you really want to get to, you know, where are we compared to where we were? The answer is it still sucks.
Well, I'm just going to say, I'm giving the 2 month numbers. The amount of people employed in March were 155.8 million. Then it went down to 133. Now it's back up to 137. So we're still down 18.5 million people since March.
Okay. Well, and here's the other thing too. Off the household numbers, I mean, you know, last month was negative 21 million. This month was plus four. So what'd you get, a quarter of it back?
Well, I'm saying even but the people in this, the column that Carl and I are always talking about is, it's like the everybody else column. We don't know what the hell they're doing. Well, there's some students in there, there's some people that have retired, or some people on disability, some people have just are officially not looking for work, and there's got to be a lot of people here that aren't looking for work. But then again, if you're getting a check from the government, by definition, you are looking for work, or else you wouldn't be getting the check. So those things are all skewed, because I know a lot of people that realize, who the hell am I going to go? I can't even go out of the house. How am I going to look for a job? You're defined as being looking for one. But that number has been amazingly steady all through 2019, all the way back really to 2017, at around 95, 96 million people. Right, Carl?
Correct.
So last month, it jumped from 96 to 103.5. I have, but yeah, 104, which is a dramatic number. And now we're still 5 million up in 2 months on a number that really hasn't changed since 2019. So it's still.
Yeah, well, the unemployed number came off 2 million, and 2 million came out of the not in labor force number. That's, I mean, that, if you just look at the top level, that's where the changes were.
What I'm saying is, it's this kind of stinks to me a little bit of a timing change, timing issue. I'm going to say that the last month numbers weren't all that correct, and these, you know, it always startles me, Carl. I mean, the numbers world that I play in, is somebody will say, in 1 month we gained 200,000 jobs, the next month we gained 50. So I'm sitting there, okay, the 1 month's got 20 working days or 21, so 10,000 people a day are being hired, and the next month it's 2. Now, how do I get the feeling that as we flip from Friday to Monday 1 week, that's not what happened? That somehow or another, at the very least, there's a blend in there somewhere, and if there's some kind of a timing. If you look at it on a daily basis, it couldn't possibly. We're talking about such a short survey that there's no way. I don't believe, Carl, that in the last 60 days we're draining. We were draining 20, what was it? It was 16 plus we drained 23 million people in 21 working days, and now we drain back 5. I'm going to say.
Oh yeah, you're absolutely right, and I mean it's there's always issues with the data collection, but I mean this is stunningly better than anybody thought was going to happen in terms of the report, which is, that's where the reaction is coming from. But anybody that thinks that this data wasn't in the hands of some people that bid up Boeing over the last few days in American Airlines, you got rocks in your head. It most certainly was.
Oh, yeah. We don't care. On the upside, we don't care.
Here's the other thing that's interesting. I'm going through this as we're talking. The gains were very broad-based on educational attainment. And, one of the things I've been blasting at for years is the fact that this is a barbell economy. If you have a bachelor's degree or master's, you've done all right. If you had nothing, not even a high school, your high school dropout, you've got jobs mopping floors, right? But the people in the middle who have high school diplomas or have an associate's or whatever, you've essentially wasted all of your effort and money because you've gotten nothing out of this. And that's the statistical reality that's been going on now since 2008 and 2009. This time around, everybody, participated at the buffet. So,
well, Kyle, how do you even, let's go through some of these, and I know I'm being a stickler, and I hope I'm not digging this too deep, but how do you even define this crap right now? And I know people that are off work from, like, hospitality places, and, restaurants and bars, because they just changed jobs, 6 months before, they're having trouble even getting the unemployment. So they're not being counted anywhere. They're not off.
My daughter got laid off, and the state still, Florida still hasn't paid her.
Right, so we don't know how, and we have some people close to the show. One of the gentlemen's wives got laid off. Well, she's getting unemployment, but she's also getting her hospitalization from the place because she's not officially totally long gone. I mean, I'm looking at these. I don't know. Chicago's bad because we've had, total lockdown pretty much here. I can't say I know a soul that went back to, quote, work April 30th. I mean, there's people that were at home that might have, even then, the city's still locked down. I mean, been
oh, no, it's not April 30th. Remember, the survey week is the second week past the report.
Which would be middle of May, I'm sorry.
April, Easter, basically.
So, I mean, I don't know of a soul who was laid off in any of those industries. There hasn't been a convention that's started up. There hasn't been a restaurant that started up. Some of the food stores that were left, the only place you could go, were hiring. A few of your restaurants, like Portillo's and places that died and went to heaven because they had the drive-through, they were sort of hiring. But, there's no way on earth on May 16th or 20th that I could have possibly envisioned 4 or 5 million people walking back through the door and actually working, Carl.
I'll tell you what, even down here in Tennessee, middle of April, the bars and restaurants were still closed. Okay, now, the governor here basically said, do what you want, here are the guidelines, but we're not enforcing them. But that was the end of April.
Yeah.
Which was after the survey week, so there is no way that data was reflected in there. And I can tell you right now, there are places down here where you can have your bar open. The problem is they're not, because all the people that they laid off, they refuse to come back. And so they've got no staff. And there's a couple of places down here where they literally can't fill the jobs because people are sitting at home taking the $600.
Well, the survey week had to be in May. These are the May numbers, not April.
These are main numbers.
Right.
But the survey week was still where were we? Because nobody was opening.
Right. Right. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
But yet,
and so at Memorial Day weekend, everything was more or less sort of open, except for those people that couldn't get anybody to come back and go work.
Well,
there's a lot of them.
I'm going to say that the 2 month numbers are accurate, or relatively accurate, and the split between April and May is suspect.
Yeah, I think you've got. I'm sort of surprised. Like I said, I'm surprised that we didn't actually, that the numbers are what they are. But yeah, I think you could probably say, okay, so the April number overstated things a little bit, and the May number understated things.
Okay, so we're off both ways in terms of, you know, damage. All right, so, you know, we kind of move both. But I, one of the things that I thought was very surprising about this, and again, if there's something that stands out to me, it's the fact that the not in labor force number came down by 2 million, and that was half of the so-called gains was there. That's a big change. And it says that the dynamic that we're getting this time around is a lot different than what we saw in 08 and 09.
Well, I'm not going to push back, but I'm going to say I never believed the 7 million number last month. Because that number has been so steady at 95, 96. Actually, it was a big jump from February to March. From 95,
it was up a couple million February to March, too.
So we're really talking like 8.5 million in 2 months. That's a lot for people to sign up on disabilities and all the other. But how do you count people in school? Well, school doesn't matter whether you're school or laying at home. But that number to me seems like it's very hard to put your finger on. Because isn't the definition of if you're getting an unemployment check, by definition you're looking, right?
Right. Well, except I'm not sure how that worked this time around, because one of the things that happened and is likely a confounding factor here and makes this a little tougher to call is that when they did the CARES Act and the $600 bonus up, they also mandated that the states stop the weekly reporting requirements. So in order to collect in Florida historically, you had to log into their portal every week and report who you tried to get a job with, you know, who you applied with, yada, yada. You had to demonstrate that you were actually trying to get a job or you couldn't collect. Well, one of the things they did with the CARES Act was they preempted all of that at the state level, at least for the $600 bonus. And so how that changed behavior, I don't know.
Well, when I was laid off in Pullman, when they got bought by Wheeler, Brader, Fry, those days you were supposed to check in every month.
Right, well, that's basically what it was. You had to check in on a, you know, it was over the web, but you actually had to list the places that you had tried to get a job from.
I think they might have called me once or something. It was obviously there was no web, so different world. But so now, Carl, I've got the NASDAQ has actually turned lower here.
I see that.
And one of my calling people said, never mind. First of all, I wanted to ask you before you dash here. One of the guys wrote in and said he thought the Amazon financing of the bonds at that rate was A, the top of the bonds and the top of the market, and it was such a nuts number, it'll be known for decades as the top. Now, obviously, it's not the top in the market, but I mean the idea.
Well, for them, you know who's leading the dumping right now, from what I'm looking at on my screen, is Amazon and Netflix.
Well, because they've done so well with this mess, but I mean, how do we have politicians? I'm going to say they're probably pretty well meaning. Most of them, they're just. I don't know, Carl. The older I get, the more I look at things, and what people's perception of things are is totally the opposite. I mean, people. I'll just go back to politics here for a second. People's perception. I mean, if you go to like these AIPAC meetings and stuff, I mean, I've gone to a couple of them because I was dragged in to fill up a table. It's the American Israeli Political Action Committee. They do more work in terms of lobbying, in terms of every single representative, than probably anybody else. There's probably other people that do as much, but these guys are pretty good at it. And everybody will tell you that the problem in Congress is we need term limits, and you got to get these people out of there. They're too long. Because the only people you see in this Twitter world we live in, the only people you see are the fossils, McConnell, Pelosi, and Schumer. Right? I mean, those are the fossils you see. What you don't see is probably in the last 10, 15, 20 years, a total flotilla of probably 100 or 200 people that ran and became representatives that were younger, maybe not just younger, were, I'm going to say, regardless of their points of view, went there for a reason, went there to help things out, went there to change stuff. Didn't matter whether they're right or left. And they all quit. I'm going to say, Carl, the perception is everybody's there forever. And the reality is, too many people are going there with an idea to help out, and after one or two terms, they say, screw this, I'm not getting anywhere, and they quit. That's really what's happening there more than everybody hanging there till they're 90. And yet people...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, by the way, back to this this thing with the jobs and the D.C. thing. Here's another interesting stat from the middle of this report. We'll see how many people in the mainstream media pick this up. Out of the layoffs, it looks like only about 300,000 of them, according to the BLS, are permanent.
Only 300,000 people laid off are permanent?
If this assumes you believe their numbers, yeah. Right? Which I'm not. But that's what I'm seeing here in the table. There's only about 300,000 of those, and 1 million from the delta from May of last year to May of this year is 1 million.
All right,
on permanent job losses.
You know, I bug you all the time by the details. Now, I'll just say I know I have a friend of a wife of a friend, well, she's a friend too. She gets laid off, hospitality industry. For the first month or two, she's on salary, okay? Then they say at the end of May, they go, we're going to do this for the end of April, because it was supposed to be, 15 days, then it was going to be 45 days. The end of April, they go, all right, it's going to be another 30 days. So that announcement by Jay Pritzker and all the other governors, all of a sudden now she goes from being paid to, we're just going to take care of your insurance for another couple months and we're going to see. And the insurance, if nothing gets better, but I hope it does, in a couple of months, they're probably going to say sayonara on the insurance. At what level there are you counted as what? I mean, she's still a...
Well, I'm not entirely sure. I'm just, I'm just looking at how the BLS categorizes things, okay? And what they're basically, what the data table in here is saying, you believe it or not, but this is where the market movement's coming from. What the data table's saying is out of the 20 million people got laid off, only 1 million of those losses are permanent. I'm not sure I'd buy that. Only 5% of the people who got canned are businesses that are never going to reopen and jobs that are never going to come back. That's what we're being told here. That's what's in this table.
Well, that's the conundrum in the whole thing, Carl. I mean, there's this particular lady. Well, she used to work in the convention industry. Say she still did, and she doesn't. But say she still did. I mean, and now the next convention McCormick Place is going to be, where the hell are we? Where 2020 is going to be July of 2021 or something. If somebody has the balls to do that, somebody is going to have her job next year. But it won't be her.
It'll be someone, right?
It'll be someone. So, I mean, if you start looking, if you take this ivory tower, look at this thing, I mean, yes, United Airlines is going to be flying. There's going to be pilots. It might not be the people they laid off last week, and they're going to have shareholders, just might not be you, holding your 100 shares of United Airlines.
Right. One thing to put some context on this. With all of the crazy stuff that the Fed and Congress have done over the last couple of months, they better be wrong about only 1 million of these job losses being permanent.
Well, yeah. Well, but what's permanent?
Because if they're not, the downstream monetary impact of this is going to make what we just went through look like a Girl Scout picnic.
I would agree with that. Jay Powell is saying that there's no limit. When in your opinion, we got a minute and a half here, when do we become Iran, Venezuela, or the Weimar Republic? Are we close?
I think you could see the start of disintegration in this area within the next 18 to 24 months.
So, $7 trillion doesn't cut it. We're going to have to be like 15 before we...
Make your money now, because you're not going to like what happens downstream if this data is actually correct.
Well, are we ever going to see people's inflationary expectations pick up, or is it just going to be in the market?
Oh no, I think it's absolutely going to pick up when you see these supposed temporary changes in the grocery store turn into permanent ones. Expectations are going to change.
Well, I've been to two of my favorite places in the last two nights because they just reopened. We were the first people open over at Mart Anthony's the other night. We walked in at 4 o'clock, and they were happy to see us. I'm going to say 15-20% across the board since they closed on the menu. Easy.
Yeah, you know, around here, not so much. I mean, there's a delta in the grocery store, and there was a short-term change in some menu prices, but they've been retracted back.
Well, you guys are doing better. I mean, but here, what are the taxes going to be in Chicago next year?
Oh, good God. There's your big problem, is that when tax revenue collapses, what happens to rates?
Well, I mean, yeah, they're acting like it hasn't happened. I mean, what is your... The rents, the taxes, I mean, for God's sake, I mean, we're going north here somewhere.
It's going to be hideous, and especially in places like Chicago.
Well, is this, is there a spot where you sell this market anywhere here, Carl? I'm saying no.
Yeah, wait for the sugar high to burn off, but you know what? It's kind of like the guy that gets jacked on fentanyl. Everything's great right up until he has a heart attack.
That's an interesting thought. So you're still liking Tennessee?
Oh, I love it here.
Did you bring any family or friends with, or are you just by yourself?
No, just by myself. I love it here. It's fantastic. So peaceful, it's nice, and you know. Yeah.
So when they get to know you too well, you got to move again?
Well, maybe.
Carl, thank you very much, buddy. SP Futures up 47, NASDAQ Futures up 11. NASDAQ's the laggard. It was just down a minute ago. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.